EF United, the premier Cold Fusion Conference by TerraTech Programming. Created by developers for developers.
Good afternoon. My name's Drew Robbins, and I'm a developer evangelist with Microsoft. Many of you might think, oh my God, an evangelist, what's that mean? Well, I'm here to support the developer community throughout my area, which I'm from Columbus, Ohio, and I cover Michigan, Ohio, and Kentucky. We've got developer evangelists spread out all across the U.S., and we're here just to give you information about our products, about our developer platform. And so that's my role at Microsoft. Today we're going to talk about IIS7. How many of you are running Cold Fusion inside of IIS today? Is anybody not running it inside IIS? One person. What are you running in?
Well, we run in
just about everything. So IIS, including other platforms as well? Okay, gotcha. So you doing Apache on Windows as well?
Mm-hmm.
Cool. What's the choice that you use Apache for? How do you make that decision? What's that? Just what the customer? And what are some of the customers demanding on for Apache? Is it particular reasons? Okay, very good. So a lot of times what I've heard, I've talked to several people coming by our booth up in the expo, and a lot of people have talked about they're using Apache on Windows or Apache on Linux for various reasons, right? Some of them it's easier configuration. Some of them they've gone through kind of the IIS issues we had several years ago, and they've chosen Apache just as an alternative for security reasons. And some of them just prefer that particular environment. So for those of you that are using IIS 6, how many of you like the metabase? How many of you know what the metabase is? And how many of you guys like it? You can put your hands down, right? You kind of like it, right? So that's one of the sticklers of IIS 6 and earlier today is this thing called the metabase. And it's this kind of black hole where you stick all your configuration information. And also IIS 6, just the architecture of it, a lot of people preferred the architecture of Apache. So we're going to talk about some of the things we've done in IIS 7 to update IIS and give you a little bit better architecture, give you a little bit more control over the configuration, and I think you'll be pleasantly surprised. So this is what we're going to talk. We're going to talk a little bit about IIS 6 and where it's been, and where we're going with IIS 7. We have these things called the pillars of IIS 7 that is just the things that they were trying to do with the product to make it better. And we're going to talk a little bit about security. There's a few big areas with IIS 7, security, extensibility. The brand new configuration system is really cool. I think you'll be impressed with that. Lots of neat things you can do with that. We'll talk a little bit about managing IIS. How many of you are managing your websites with scripts and things like that? Yep, so it's the same two hands going up. You guys are doing it all, man. So we'll talk a little bit about managing IIS and how you can script that and work with the configuration files. And then there's a lot of really cool stuff with troubleshooting IIS now. So when you have an issue with your website, it's not responding, or you have some request that's taking longer than you expected it to, sometimes it's a little difficult to diagnose those things, and there's some really neat things in IIS 7 for diagnosing your applications. So first, let's talk a little bit about IIS 6 and the pillars of what we were trying to do with IIS 6. IIS 6 really was the result of a major re-engineering of the way we develop software at Microsoft. It was one of the first high-profile products that came out of Microsoft after we kind of stopped and said, you know what, we really need to work on our development process to make our applications more secure. We had some of those worms that were out on the web, and I'm sure some of you are impacted by those. And we really want to make sure we prevented those types of things in the future. And so IIS 6 was a pretty big re-engineering of IIS. And one of the big areas was with security. And there was a couple different things that they wanted to do with security with IIS. One was they wanted it to be secure by default. So people who install IIS and take the default options, they want that to be the secure installation of IIS. So in earlier versions of IIS, if you just went through next, you would end up with all this extra stuff, sample software, assemblies, ISAPI filters that you may have never used. But then hackers could end up targeting those things with attacks and compromising your system. So they really wanted to work on the security and make sure it was secure by default and make it easier for you to secure your server. reliability, they really wanted to build in a more fault-tolerant architecture. But then on top of that, if there were issues, they also wanted to give you better ways to diagnose those particular issues. And hopefully you've taken advantage of some of those things. Scalability, just being able to scale up and scale out. Kernel mode caching was a big addition to IIS 6 that really improved performance. And system management. So there was more XML-based configuration. We provided a command line administration tool so you could script things. And we also provided remote administration with IIS 6. So those were kind of the things we were working on with IIS 6. IIS 7, we tried to take it beyond that those few pillars in IIS 6. And we really took some time to re-architect IIS 7 and build in some additional areas that were important to our customers. So one of those areas was insecurity, even making it more secure. There's still a lot of things in IIS 6 in the base install that you have to install, whether you're running and leveraging those things or not. And some of those things you can turn on and turn off, but in IIS 7, we went a step further and made everything componentized. And I think you'll really be impressed with how granular you can get in the things that you select to run or not run. Extensibility. Extensibility is kind of mixed up in IIS 6 right now because you've got ways to extend it with what we call unmanaged code or C or C++ code, and you have ways to extend it with our new .NET platform. But those things didn't really work well together. So in IIS 7, we've brought those things together and given you more of a unified platform to extend IIS. As far as configuration, we kind of got started with IIS 6 and ASP.NET and the ability to have XML-based configuration files. So you could include some configuration with your application and push it up to the server when you deployed your application. In IIS 7, we take that even further, and the XML files can really configure quite pretty much everything in IIS is configured through an XML file now, which makes it really, really nice, really easy for you to deploy configuration. System management, there's a brand new IIS manager. And with everything brand new, you'll probably hate it at first, and then eventually you'll grow to understand where things are in the new application, and then I think you'll really prefer it. One of the big things with this new IIS manager is it can communicate with a remote server across HTTP. So you can, if you're a hoster or if you're using a hoster that provides this HTTP interface, then you can actually use IIS manager locally to configure a remote server, which is a big advantage. There's also an app command tool, so you can do everything from the command line that you can do from the IIS manager. In fact, we'll talk about three different ways to configure IIS, and one will be with the configuration files, one will be with app command, and one will be with the IIS manager itself. So you can kind of use your preference there. And then diagnostics, I would say diagnostics is probably one of the best new features in IIS 7. There's this thing called a failed request event buffer that will collect information about a request, and if it fails, it'll dump it out to an XML file so you can analyze that later. We'll get into that quite a bit. So first, let's talk about security. And the big thing with security is this new custom componentized web server. And the basic idea is that you can pick the type of IIS server that you want to have running on your machine. If you look at IIS 6 today, you really just had a few options for what you wanted to turn on and turn off. So you could choose the FTP service, right? And you could choose to install the admin tool or choose not to install the admin tool. You could choose to install the WW service. And there was a few components in the WW service you could turn on and off. And then there was the common files, of course, that you had to have on the machine if you had any IIS. So those were the major components in IIS 6 that you could choose to install or not install. In IIS 7, we actually have all kinds of things. It gets very granular. Every little box on this screen is something that you can choose to have turned on or turned off in IIS 7. And so you can really get the system you want. And there's a couple advantages to that. One of them is that you can get more performance out of the system. You have less running, and you have less things that are taking up performance, taking up CPU cycles on the server. The other advantage is security. Because you can have only the things running that you exactly need. Let's say that you're going to only serve static files from your web server. You could have just the modules required to do static files, just to serve images and HTML files. Or, if you want to go beyond that, you can say, I'm going to serve only static and ASP files, right? And so we're actually going to configure IIS to, in our demo to serve static files and Cold Fusion files only. And then everything else on the server is turned off. It's not available for a hacker to exploit. So let's take a look at how that'll work. So the first thing that we want to do is just kind of take a lap around the configuration files here really quick. And you'll see that I'm going to use the configuration files in these first couple demos, and then later on we're going to switch into IIS Manager. So if you're not into editing XML files, don't worry about it. There's a lot of different options to configure. I'm just, so that you understand what's going on underneath the hood, we're going to use these configuration files. So let's actually open one. There's a couple different places where you can find configuration, and we'll talk about this a little bit more. But one of those is in System32, the INET, the IIS directory. And there's a file in there called applicationhost.config, and that's kind of the main central configuration file on your machine. And then you'll have little configuration files that go along with your application as well. And we'll look at that in a later demo. So once I open up applicationhost.config, you'll see that everything that you saw or that you could edit in the old IIS manager is available in this configuration file. So it's not hidden in some metabase that you can't get to anymore. So the first section here is the application host section, and this is what's going to set up the application pools on the server. It's going to set up some custom metadata. There's adapter configuration. But the big area that you'll probably be concerned with is the site section. And so the site section is where you set up the various sites that are going to be listening for requests over HTTP, as well as the application directories that you want in those sites. So as you can see here, I've got a default website, and I've got one application, and that is the root of that website defined here. And you'll see there's also bindings, so if I wanted to change this binding to answer on a different IP address, I could do that here. Again, you can do anything you need to in these configuration files. So what I'm going to end up doing is adding a new application. If you look at my Explorer here, I have a directory under C, under Demos IIS7, called app. And that directory has a couple files in it. One is it's got a static HTML file. I've got a Cold Fusion file, a real simple Cold Fusion file, and then a real simple ASP.NET file, all in the same directory here. And so what I want to do is configure that as an application off of my default website. So it's as easy as typing in some tags here. So we'll type in application. We're going to have this be answering at the off the root on this app directory. And then what we're going to do is map a virtual directory to that physical directory on my drive. So we got our physical path here, and we'll just point this at demos, IIS7, and app. And so now what we should have, what's that? Thank you. See, you're a good audience because you tell me before it fails. A lot of audiences will wait until it blows up, and it's like, you did it. And I know why. All right, cool. So let's switch over. Whoops, lost my window there. Let's switch over to my browser, and let's refresh this. And I now have the ability to get at my static files here. So I've now configured an application within this configuration file just by using the XML configuration. So let's do some more stuff, some kind of fun stuff. So let's look a little bit further through this file. One of the sections that you'll notice further down, we've got our default document section. We've got this thing called global modules. The global modules is all those things that we saw on that screen earlier. So these are the components that you can turn on and turn off. And the global modules section is where you define the for that server all of the code that's going to be available, all the components that are going to be available for the web applications themselves to leverage. And so we provide our global modules here, and you'll see several of them that are probably looking useful here. So somewhere in here we've got our static file module. We've got our SAPI module here. We've got a tracing module. custom error module. We'll get into some of those a little bit later. We've got our different authentication modules for doing the various authentication types. So these are all the things that are made available to the rest of the configuration. We've got a compression section here. We've got an error section that we'll talk a little bit more about. Logging, security, all kinds of different things here. Our MIME mappings to map all of our extensions to MIME types. There's a ton of those. You can add those if you need to. And then as we get further down, we've got our tracing turned on. And then finally, we get down to our a location section. So that what this is doing is it's taking a particular location on the server. And in this case, it's just the root. And it's applying additional configuration to that location. And one of those things is the handlers. And so the handlers, of course, are mapped to particular extensions or to all files, and they're going to be executing based on what particular request we make. And then there's also a section of modules. And so from that global modules list, we now choose which ones we want to actually use within this particular application or this particular website. Okay? So that's everything configured. Let's take a look at, we've made that request off of the current configuration. What I want to do is drop down to my DOS prompt again, and I want to run this kind of neat utility from sysinternals, and that's called listDLLs. And what I'm going to do is pass it the service name, W3WP, which is the IIS server, and what it's going to do is just dump out a list of DLLs that are currently loaded for that particular service. And so let me just dump that into a file right now. And what I want you to see, and I'll pull that up in Notepad, is that there's quite a few DLLs that are loaded. So these are all kinds of things. There's one of these for each of those modules that was configured, each of those handlers. And these are all the things that are turned on right now. And I'm not using them all. So what I want to do is create a configuration where maybe I've got less modules actually loaded. So let's go back to my application host. And what we're going to do is just comment out some sections here. I'm not going to delete them because I don't think you want me to type them back in. And there's probably better things to do today than watch me type. So we've removed the global modules. So we also need to remove handlers and modules that reference those global modules. And let me do the modules as well. And so I've basically commented out all of the modules. What do you think is going to happen when I make this request now? Anyone? You think an error page will happen? There's actually no error handling module there, so there's actually going to be an error page. It's actually just nothing. If I went into the telnet session right now and made a request to the server, it would return nothing. I basically created a null internet server. It does nothing, right? All it does is listen on HTTP. Yeah? Doesn't return anything. Not status, nothing. If I went into telnet, it would just exit after I did the get. It's absolutely nothing because there's no modules other than the thing that's listening on HTTP. So it's kind of an interesting experiment. I thought it was kind of cool that you could go down to like a null server, if you could call it that. So now let's actually add some functionality. Or actually, before we do that, now that I've done that, let me just cycle IIS. And you'll notice as I'm doing the configuration that I actually don't need the cycle IIS. But what I want to do is, because I'm going to list out those DLLs, I just want to make sure that we reload the assemblies and start from scratch. And then I want to see how many actually get loaded. So I'll do that request one more time. And then I'm going to go back up and dump these DLLs out to a text file again. And then we'll take a look at this file. And you'll see there's still, you know, several DLLs that are kind of in the common component for IIS. But if you compare these lists with each other, it's actually quite a bit fewer, almost on the order of half, maybe even fewer than that. So you can really get down to the point where you're only loading the things that you need. And if you want a null server, you can do that. Maybe throw people off. So now what we want to do is we've kind of got this thing down to zero. Let's actually add some additional functionality. So what I'm going to do is go back up to global modules. And let's take the static file module. and move that out of the comment it out section. So now we have the static file module available. I'll go down to my handlers, and we'll find the static file handler, which is just mapped to everything. And what he's actually doing is looking at the MIME types to decide what things he's going to serve or not serve. And then I'm going to, actually that's it. Or no, I'm going to take the static file module and move that out. All right, so now we've got the ability to serve static files. So if I go back to my web browser and refresh, we will end up getting our HTML file. Make sure I saved here. Just double check. Static file module, static file. Got the global modules. Oh, you know what? There's actually a module for a default document as well, and that's what I don't have in there. So let me actually go default.htm. So again, everything is a component, and you can choose which things you want to see and which things you don't want to see. Default.htm is not working either. You shouldn't have to reset IIS, no. It should read the new configuration. So it's looking, it's monitoring this file for configuration changes, and it should pick them up right away when you do that. So it's not doing that, though, so that's all right. So let's see what happens if I try to do my hello world here at CFM. And that actually responds. Oh, no, it doesn't. It's just in the cache there. All right, so I'm not going to belabor that too much. You get the idea that you can kind of kill all these modules, and then you can configure the ones that you actually need. And you can have just the services turned on that you're going to use. It's a lot more secure, and you got a much smaller memory footprint that way. Very interesting. All right. And just because you said it, I am going to just do an IIS reset. So when all else fails, you have your backup configuration files, right? So if you're going to mess with the configuration file, that's my first advice for today, is make sure you have backups of that configuration file so you can restore it at any point, which actually is kind of an advantage. So if you want to, you know, back up your configuration file every so often, it's very easy to restore. You don't have to have a script where you dump the IIS metabase out to a file and then import it later. You just copy the configuration files over to where you need them. So let's actually do step two and close this guy and then reopen them. Okay, so if we scan down now, I should have some modules defined. And I've got I've actually got my SAPI module defined, my static file module. I also have anonymous authentication module defined here. And if I scroll down further, I've got my handlers, my CFM handler. I've configured that. And so CFM handler is actually going to look, it's going to point the ISAPI filter at CFM and point it at the Cold Fusion ISAPI filter. So I've got that configured over here. I've also, just so you know, if you try to do this, there's another section called ISAPI CGI filters or restrictions. And what this is it allows you to have a central area where you can say, here's all the allowed ISAPI filters on this particular server. So that way, you know exactly what is allowed to run and what's not. And again, just for security's sake there. And so now, if I go back over to my browser, cross my fingers, and I get a Cold Fusion page now. And all I've done is I've done a CF dump to output several of the environment variables, the request variables that are available there to Cold Fusion. Any questions about that? The configuration files? Yes. No, actually, I don't believe there is. So I just end up running it, and there's a pretty good error message. It'll tell you the line number where it's failed. A lot of times it's when you don't, the person pointed out that I didn't close my tag the right way at one point. And so that's often the case if you've got some malformed XML or something like that. Yeah, it's going to, yep. So it'll log the error to the event logger, as well as you'll see that come up in your browser when you do a local request on IIS. Yep. You'll know it right away. Your users will start complaining, so do it in development first, and then you can copy it. That's one of the nice things, is you can do it in development, and then you can just copy it off to the server to deploy it. And if you've got to copy it to 100 servers, it's real easy. You don't have to go through that WMI stuff or anything like that. All right. So let me switch back here. So just the review, for security in IIS 7, we're slim and efficient. We only install the components that you're actually going to leverage in IIS 7. That gives you a reduced attack surface. It says here 5 times more granular than existing IIS versions. So that's great to be able to have that type of control. As far as extensibility in IIS 7, the best way to describe this is kind of look at where we've been. Internet Server API or ISAPI filters is how you extended IIS in the past. And this was great if you were a really good C or C++ coder and you could decipher the Win32 APIs. But it really wasn't a broad, it didn't really open up IIS extensions to a broad audience because it was kind of difficult to create these. It's pretty cumbersome. So the other way to extend IIS was through ASP.NET, and one of the problems with doing it that way was that ASP.NET was an ISAPI filter itself, and once you went into ASP.NET, then it would actually run through the extensions that you created in the .NET framework. And this request is kind of going through here, so what's happened is we have a request coming in for an ASP.NET page, and we go through the ISAPI pipeline first. Okay, so this is the IIS pipeline that's working with the request as it goes through the pipeline. We eventually get to the ASP.NET ISAPI filter. We pass the request across, and then we go through all of the ASP.NET modules. Okay, and the ASP.NET modules then work on the request, and we eventually get to the page handler. So the page handler is similar to the Cold Fusion engine at that point. And then we process that request, and then we send the response back through the same pipeline. Now, one of the issues is you may actually want to have one of your ASP.NET modules or your written in C# or VB execute earlier on in the process, but that's not available at that point because we haven't passed execution over to ASP.NET yet. So that was a disadvantage of that model. If you requested a static file, your nice managed code, these modules that are easier to create, didn't even get access to the pipeline. So the static file wouldn't even pass over to ASP.NET because it wasn't integrated like that. So the issue was with that was that if you used some ASP.NET authentication or if you used a custom authentication module that you created in .NET, it wouldn't take for static files or anything that didn't execute within ASP.NET. So that was a pretty big limitation. So with IIS 7, the pipeline is now merged. So ISAPI extensions that are written in unmanaged code in C or C++ are executed in the same pipeline as the ASP.NET modules. So what that means is your request goes through this pipeline. You can use native or managed modules. It eventually will get to the ISAPI extension, which will execute the request, or it will go over to the ASP.NET handler to execute that request. And then the response will go back. So let's take a look at how we can use that to our advantage. So if I go back to my configuration files here, one of the things that you'll notice this is Windows Vista. And the reason I'm doing this is because actually in PowerPoint I can't Alt-Tab anymore. And so I'm using this new Windows tab in Windows Vista. It's one of the new features in Windows Vista. What's that? You can go get beta 2 right now. You can. Yeah, you might. I'm not sure what the process is, but I know it's available to the public right now. So, any other issues, you have to have, there's a subset of computers right now that are actually supporting the graphics capability. Just until we are closer to release, the support won't be brought in yet. So, let me, look down here. What I have is, our handlers are provided here, and I actually want to get a different configuration file. So let's go and copy and what I want to do is kind of play around with the modules that we have in place here. And what we have configured right now is the ability to use any of these authentication. We have all these authentication types added as modules, and they're in the pipeline. Some of these are unmanaged modules, and some of these are managed modules. But what we want to do is go back to our application and actually configure how we're going to authenticate against the application. So if I go back up to Demos, IIS 7, we also have the ability to have a local configuration file. So what I'm going to do is create my local configuration file, and what this does is gives me settings for whichever application I'm in at that point, whether it be the directory or the root of the web server or wherever I'm at. I can actually have local settings that are similar to the settings you saw in application host.config. And so basically, this is the configuration I have right now. What I want to do is turn on authentication. And I have Windows authentication turned off. And what we're going to do is actually add basic authentication. And so this is yet another module that can be turned on or turned off. And when I turn that on, if I go back to my page and refresh, I should get prompted now for some credentials using basic authentication. And so I can log in. And that allows me to request that page. And if I look at the current user, I should see it's my Drew user account. So that's the ability to turn on and use the modules that are included in the box. But what if you're a developer and you want to create your own module? So maybe you want to extend IIS and you want to have some custom authentication built into IIS. Well, in the past, that would have meant probably creating an ISAPI filter, and you would have had to gotten a C or C++ code and create that. In IIS, you have the ability to use IIS 7, you have the ability to use managed code for that as well. So you can use C# or VB, which is going to be a lot more comfortable for you as a Cold Fusion developer. So I have here a module that I've written. So I'll just open that up. And it's written in C#. And so C# is pretty similar in syntax to Java. But basically what we're doing is we've got an authenticate user event that we're answering. And basically we're just looking at a cookie to see if we've authenticated the user already. And if we've not, then we're actually going to extract credentials out of we're actually going to demand that the browser provide the login, right, and give us some credentials. And so then once we get the credentials back from the user, we'll extract those from the context and make sure the user is authenticated. And so I don't want to go too deeply into this code, but basically what we're just doing is sending back. So we've got the code in order to issue an authentication challenge to the browser and make the browser actually prompt the user for credentials. Then what we're doing is once we get the credentials, we're going to validate them. And right now we're just short-circuiting this by saying we're going to just test or check that they've used test as username and test as the password and return true if they've done that, return false if they've not. So, of course, right here is where you might look at your custom membership database. Or if you're using ASP.NET membership, you could look at the ASP.NET membership database. So once I have that in my ASP.NET directory, that will be compiled by ASP.NET when we make the request. And what we can do is go back to our configuration file. And we can configure that. So if we turn basic authentication off now, we've got our basic authentication module configured. We'll refresh. And now we're prompted for credentials using our basic authentication module. So if I type in Drew now, of course, I'm not using basic authentication. It's going to deny me on that. It's got to be test and test. And now I've created an authentication module. So this is something you couldn't do in the past, right? Create managed code that would sit there and authenticate even against static files or, in this case, a Cold Fusion file. So you can see that there's a lot of integration here where you can use Cold Fusion as well as .NET together. Let me switch back to PowerPoint. So extensibility, again, in the core server, you have a more consistent way to build modules that you can fit into the IIS pipeline and work with the request, create authentication modules or tracing modules or anything else that you would want to do during the request. As far as configuration, you've seen some of the new things with the configuration files. The big thing, of course, is that the metabase is gone. And if you've ever tried to work with the metabase, you're going to be really happy that that's gone. The new files, of course, is that central file that we've been using, application-host.config. It's a strongly typed file that you can edit and configure anything that you need to in that file that you would in the IIS Manager as well. It's a distributed configuration. So you saw when I was I have that central file, but then I can also have configuration settings that are pushed out to the ASP.NET application itself, or to your Cold Fusion application. So this is an example of how messed up the metabase was in IIS 6. There was a lot of repetitive information in the metabase. As soon as you went to do something custom in a virtual directory or an application, a lot of information was copied over to that new metabase location. In IIS 7, it does a lot better job of reorganizing and not repeating information. So it's more additive and uses an inheritance instead of a copy. The other nice thing about the configuration system is that you can delegate control. So what you can end up doing is you can have site administrators have access to the web.config or the application host.config in the root of the web application or at the in the system directory for the server. And then what you can do is at the application level, you can have your the application manager, the app admin, have control at that level. And you can actually have pretty granular control over the things that they're allowed to change and what you are allowed to specify. So you can lock just about anything in the configuration. So let's take a look at how that works. So you saw how I had kind of messed around with the authentication. And sometimes in a server environment or a data center environment, you really don't want developers or the web application admins to have that type of control. So one of the things that you can do is lock particular items. You'll notice in this location path where I have this root, there's this attribute called override mode. And override mode is set to allow right now. So I'm basically saying anything that's in this configuration, allow the web application or the website administrator or the application administrator to override those particular settings. What I can do if I want to lock down some of these settings is I can take that, create a new location, say override mode equals deny. And what we'll do is we'll just take some of the security settings, and the one we want is this Windows authentication, and we'll move that up into that section. So what we do is we just replicate the hierarchy or the schema here. We'll paste that Windows authentication section in. And now we've basically said that you cannot override that particular setting. So if we set this to true, remember we set Windows authentication to false in the web.config file. If I go back to my application and I refresh it, I should now get an error. And the error is that I have a locked section. Make sure I have an unrecognized section because I need authentication. So you got to replicate those that hierarchy there, that XML structure. And now what I have is that this section right here basically just says that that configuration path cannot be used because it's been locked at the server level. So I've said, you know what, you cannot turn off Windows authentication. That's the type of authentication we want to use. So that's a way that you can turn off or lock entire sections of the configuration and make sure that administrator or the website administrators or the developers or web app administrators cannot override those sections. You can also get more granular than this. So if I want to say, okay, you can turn on and off Windows authentication, but I don't want to allow you to actually add new providers. So maybe what we want is we don't want to have NTLM turned on. We want to make sure that it's negotiate. What we can do is say lock elements. And so we can put lock elements anywhere within the XML, and we can lock any sub-elements of that particular node. So what we can do in this case is we'll say you can't add anything more, you can't remove, and you cannot clear. So you have to use negotiate. So you can turn on and off Windows authentication, but you cannot change which type of Windows authentication it uses. So if I go over and request my page again, it now gives me a lock violation. It says that that particular section is being locked here. So let me go to my web.config. I can find the right one there. Okay. And so what I have is my Windows authentication. You'll see I'm trying to add digest, but that's been locked. And so if I get rid of that add, and we go back to my browser and refresh, now it allows me to do that. So you get some pretty granular control over the configuration files. Now, you can also use a thing called lock attributes if you want to lock attributes. And, of course, you can use this this location path to override or to lock entire sections of the configuration. So lots of ways to do that. You can also do that in the UI, and I'll show you that in a few minutes here. So as far as configuration, again, you have delegation of config settings to developers so that they can control some of the settings and you can lock other settings. You have this xcopy deployment capability, so that web.config file can be copied up to a server with my with the rest of my application files so that my configuration can be automatic with that server. In that web.config file, you can do just about anything that the administrator will allow you to do. So you can enable new modules. You could you can enable the different authentication mechanisms. You can do all kinds of things that you weren't able to do unless you had access to that IIS manager previously. There's also a configuration API through the app command that will allow you to script out changes if you want to do that and not have to edit the XML files. So let's talk about management a little bit more. There's really four different ways to manage IIS 7. The first is with IIS Manager, and we'll take a look at this in the next demo. But basically, it's a new IIS Manager that's a lot better organized than what IIS Manager was in IIS 6 and previous versions. It was really difficult in earlier versions of IIS to find where you had to go in order to configure some element. And so this is going to be a much more streamlined interface. The other thing that's nice about this interface is if you can get into some .NET code, you can actually extend this interface. You can add entirely new screens to it if you want to do that. So you can actually include your application configuration in IIS Manager itself. You also have WMI. WMI is a way that a lot of people scripted changes to IIS in the past, and that is still available. So you have that capability. What will happen instead of course, updating the metabase now is that WMI will go to the configuration files and make the changes in the XML. There's also a tool called app command that you can run from the command line, and you can inspect as well as make changes to the configuration files. So this is an example of listing out the websites available on the local server with app command. Another useful command is to be able to list the active requests. So if you want to drop down to a DOS prompt and get a list of of currently executing requests, you can do that. One of the issues with the new configuration, of course, would be, well, I've got all these scripts that use the old IIS6 interfaces or the old IIS6 management capability. What's going to happen to those? Well, all of those should just work out of the box with IIS7 as long as you install the compatibility components. Yes?
Can I get that in writing?
It is in writing. It says right there, existing scripts will just work. All right? Do you want me to sign it? Or all right. You can put me on the line. Are you going to shoot me or something if one doesn't work?
All right.
The book?
Yeah.
There you go. All right. No, I'll get one of the product managers to sign it. They're in the audience. So, So if you install the compatibility, all of your existing scripts will just work. That's what the goal is there. So let's take a look at different management options. What I'm going to do is switch into IIS Manager now. Let me do that. Okay, so I'm in IIS Manager now, and you'll see that again. It's a new interface here. There's various levels, so it follows the inheritance hierarchy of configuration. So the root configuration would represent the root the server node there. Underneath the root configuration is your ability to configure application pools and websites. If you get used to the XML configuration files, then you'll be able to navigate this as well, or vice versa. So if you know how to navigate this, you'll be able to find things in the configuration files, because you'll remember I had an application pools section, and then I had a website section that I was configuring. Then I can drill down into default website. One of the nice things about this interface as well is there's all kinds of things that you can turn on and off in IIS, but sometimes it can be, again, hard to find things. So one of the things you can do is you can filter the interface. So you can say, you know what, I'm really concerned about ASP.NET at this point, and I'm concerned about HTTP features or security. And so now I only have the things that show for ASP.NET security, and you can get into those things. Or you can leave the filters off and show everything. So then you can drill down into your various application domains as well, and again, get into those various components. If I look at the root here, there is a section called feature delegation. And everything that I did with the locking and unlocking in the XML configuration files, you can do here inside of feature delegation. So you'll see it lists out all the different components of the XML configuration files and tells you if they're currently read, write, or read only. So if you want to lock Windows authentication in the interface, you can highlight that and then choose if you want it to be read only, if you want to not specify that, or if you want it to inherit that from an earlier section. So I can switch that to read only. So again, everything you do in the XML files can be done in the configuration interface as well. So the other thing that we can do with the interface is we can extend it. And so if you want to include your own application configuration inside this interface, you can do that. I have a section here called Demo. And when I double-click on that, you'll see that it just says, Hello World from iNet Manager. If I look at Visual Studio, the right project here, you'll see that I have some C# code here. And it's pretty simple code to just get a presence inside of iNet Manager. Basically, we're just going to create a demo module, and that demo module is going to actually return an instance of our particular configuration interface. Our configuration interface is basically pointing at this thing called demo page, and all demo pages is a control that can live inside of IIS. So this is a pattern. This is all documented on in the IIS documentation. I'll show you where to get to that at the end. And what you can do is once you have demo page instantiated, then you can just add our .NET controls to it. So all I've done is created a label, and I've added the text to the label, Hello World from iNet Manager, and then I've added that as a control to demo page. So if I want to get a little bit fancier, what I can do is just add a User control, which is just a UI element in Windows Forms. We'll just call it user control 1. And then I can use all of the rich controls in .NET in order to create an interface here for my application configuration. And so maybe I want to have some buttons on the form. Again, I'm just gonna throw a bunch of stuff up here. Label, maybe a date chooser. So we'll pop that on there. And then make it just a little bit bigger here. And then instead of adding the label to my demo page, what I'll do is instantiate my user control. And add that to my demo page. So we'll build that. And I just need to go into that directory and register that particular control. And again, these commands are all documented for you. And then I just need to restart IIS Manager. So I'm just going to launch that from the command line here. And I'll look at my demo page. And now I've got my new interface. So it's that easy to actually add configuration UI into our new IIS Manager. That was a lot harder to do in the past. So again, system management, there's several different options to manage your IIS server. The configuration files, IIS manager, app command are all options there, or WMI if you're into that type of thing. So another area with IIS 7 is with troubleshooting, and this is actually one of the really cool areas of IIS 7. There's a lot of new in-process state information you can get at with IIS. You can get access to application pools that are currently executing. You can find which app domains are loaded. You can unload them if you want to. You can start and stop sites in real time. But a really cool feature is this thing called FREB, a failed request event buffer is what that stands for. And basically what it's doing is it's tracking a request through its execution, going through all the different modules, as well as the ASP.NET or Cold Fusion filter as well, and just tracking that and buffering that. If something were to fail inside of IIS, it takes that buffer and it dumps it down into an XML file in a local system so that you can then inspect that XML file. You can either get an application that will process the XML, or you can just use the included XSL to translate it into HTML so you can read it. We'll take a look at that in just a second. It's a really neat feature. The other thing that you can do with IIS 7 is you have a lot more control over custom errors. So if you want to have a custom error page for a 404 or a 500 error, you can do that with IIS 7. You can make those language specific so that if you have a globalized application, you can make sure that the error messages are readable in the various cultures that you're going to deploy that to. So let's take a look at FREB. And what I want to do is go make sure that it's turned on. The place that you're going to turn this on is a couple different places. One is you're going to go to the website itself, and over in the right-hand corner or right-hand side here is this thing called failed request tracing, and you're just going to enable that. I already have it enabled for this particular website, and you're going to choose where you want to output the files. So when there is a failed request, where do I want to dump the files to? Then at either the website level or at your application level, you can use this failed request tracing module. You can double-click on that and bring it up and decide what types of requests you actually want to monitor or keep the buffer for. So if I go to my application level, I think I already have one configured. Or not, but what I want to do is add one here. And so what I'm going to do is add a new trace rule. And basically what I'm saying is, do you want to trace all content, Or do you want to trace just particular extensions? And so we provide ASP.NET and ASP as an option. If you want to just trace Cold Fusion, you can use just .cfm there. I'm going to do all content. I'm going to click Next. Then it'll ask you, well, what status codes do you want to collect tracing information for? So here you can say, I want to collect it for 404, for 500. You can add a comma-separated list. Actually, by the time we release, what they want to do is make this a regular expression so you can get pretty powerful with the type of rules that you create and what you want to collect. The other thing you can do is you can have rules where you only collect if the request were to take a certain amount of time. I'm going to leave that off right now. And actually, what I'm going to do is trace on 200. So I'm actually going to trace on a success because I just want to use that same page that we had. Then the other thing that you can choose is, when I am tracing, what information do I want to collect? And you can choose which modules you want to collect for and how verbose you want to be with that collection. So I'm going to just select the ISAP extensions, ASP.NET, as well as the web server. And now I have my request rule in place. So if I go back and request that page again, refresh, and then I go back to the file system, and let's take a look at inetpub logs and failed request logs. What you'll see is an XML file that got dumped out there. And hopefully, we got the right time there, so it was the one that was just created. And what I'm going to do is just open that up in Notepad, and you'll see that it's got quite a bit of information in it. And so that's not going to be very useful. You're going to want to do something with that, either parse it with an application that you write, or the other option is, if you notice way up at the top, we've got an XSL referenced, okay, called freb.xsl. This is just generated by IIS when you point it at this directory. So that's right there. So the thing that I can do now is I can say open this with Internet Explorer, and it will use that XSL to translate it into HTML. And so here you get all that information that's collected, and you can really step through and say, so see where the modules were executing. If it's a request that maybe it was executing for too long, you can see where it spent most of its time. If I scroll down, at some point we'll get to the Cold Fusion module, and you'll be able to see that in there. And so it's dumped in there somewhere. But then what you have is a timestamp for each of these, so you can actually start to diagnose and say, all right, where is this particular request spending most of its time? So the other thing that you can do as far as diagnostics is if you have a request that is taking quite a while. Yeah. Yeah, and that dumped it out. So what you're going to do is just do it on 500 errors, right, or something like that, on error pages that have some kind of exception, right? I did it on a success page, and so it's not a good idea to collect on success pages, absolutely. Uh-huh. Yeah. There is a lot of information, right? So you don't want to collect it on everything. But the other thing that you can do is if I look back at my rule, you have quite a bit of control over what things get collected and what don't. So you could say, I don't really care about ASP.NET collection, so I'm not going to collect on any of the ASP.NET modules. If I look at a SAPI extension, I might actually back it out to only critical errors. Okay? WW server, I might want to turn off and only collect certain things there. Okay, so you have pretty granular control over how much stuff gets dumped out to that file. But you're right. Yes. Yep. Individual sites, individual applications, you can do it anywhere in that hierarchy of configuration. So actually you could drill down into a directory and say only requests within this directory are going to get collected. Okay? Any other questions? Yes. Yes. So there's actually a tracing module that you'll write events out to. In my custom authentication module, I have an example of that here. So what you do is you instantiate this trace source, and the source is the column on the left side that just says where is the event coming from. So you instantiate a trace source, and then you can just write trace events out to that trace source, and then it will be collected with that collection as well. And then you can advertise, I believe this is informational, or I believe this is a critical error, so that then the administrator has control over whether they collect that information or not. Any other questions? Well, we'll have some time at the end. I got to finish up because they're pretty strict about the 1 hour, and so I'll stick around at the end, though. So as far as troubleshooting, we've got that real-time server state information. We have the control API, so we can turn things on and turn them off. We can unload app domains if we want to. I'm finishing up. So putting it all together, again, we've got stronger security in IIS 7. We have the ability to really only run the things that we need to run, which is really important. The extensibility, so you have a lot more options in the way that you extend your applications, build in custom authentication, things like that. You've got the increased control over configuration. The metabase is gone. That's a good thing. And you've got those various ways in order to work with the configuration. The management options are pretty robust as well. You should be able to have a lot more ways to diagnose applications when they do fail. If you're looking for more information in IIS, there is a new community portal called www.iis.net, and there's all kinds of information about IIS 7 on there. Most of the code that I've shown you today are part of examples that are out on IIS.net, so you can go out and get those and play around with them as well. A ton of other resources here that I think you have in your printouts as well. So I'll stick around for additional questions. But thank you.
Thank you for listening, and we hope we will see you at CF United 2007. This has been a production by TerraTech Programming. For more information, go to www.cfunited.com.